Welcome to the Mosh Stars Podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. I am one of your hosts, Menace, and I'm here with Flash.
Nope.
Yo, what is up, dude?
Nothing much, man. Chilling.
Yeah, good morning. I'm wonderful. This is going to be a great episode. I just have a feeling about this. Oh, you know how I said it was morning? I'm getting like my, you know, that stretch everyone has to do, you know, to make to feel good, like that big body stretch. That is that. Oh, yeah, it feels so good. All right. If you like to support the show, you can do so by finding us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms. Leave us a 5-star review or a comment, seeing as comments are we're getting a lot more comments on these podcast episodes through Spotify. So I love it. Keep it coming. And then you can also support us via Patreon. That was the wrong button. You
I have no idea. I'm not hearing the sound.
Okay. I'm glad you didn't hear that button. It was the sad trombone. You can support us on Patreon, where you can become an official Pepperhead for $3 a month and get access to each of our bi-weekly giveaways, which we'll do at the end of this episode, so stick around. You can also become a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead, like Will Rule, K Mr. K, UWP Quirt, Demon 82, Tommy Cypher, Jacob Hibbard, The Boogie Ghost, Pool Boy Barry, Draw for Turn, KB, maybe Jeremy, maybe Anthony, and that for $5 a month gets you two entries into each of our bi-weekly giveaways. We also have Reven Lift hanging out in the Mockstars Dr. Pepper Lounge. Any WB All-Stars in there this week? Maybe the Monstars show up, roll through the Ghost of Muggsy Bogues? Let's see. Magic news this week. Not a whole lot going on in the game. Like, I think it's just between... It's funny how,
didn't
like...
Foundations drop?
Foundations did drop, and it's been, like, affecting...
Did you go to any, like, pre-release or anything like that?
No, I didn't feel the... You know, like, usually there's something unique about a set that, like, draws me to it and, like, makes me want to go experience pre-release. You know, like, the immersion of, like... You know, Kamigawa Neon Dynasty was enough to, like, draw me in, which, by the way, amazing pre-release experience, amazing draft experience. So if you're looking to do, like, vintage, I hate to say, like, vintage, but, like, if you're doing a draft and you're looking for packs of cards that are going to make for a very unique experience, Kamigawa Neon Dynasty is one of them. Even Lost Caverns of Ixalan was actually a pretty good draft experience pre-release. I really wanted the dinosaurs, but that's why I went. And then, let's see. No, Foundations didn't have that for me. Like, it has some goofy cards, I will say that. But, like, nothing to, like, pull me in. I'm not interested in having a Sanguine Bond instant kill combo within a limited experience, I guess. It was very segmented between cats and vampires and zombies, or, you know, all the stuff that Magic is known for, but it didn't have, like, cohesion, so I didn't have the same interest. These cards have been affecting Standard now more, like, than ever. We're starting to see a lot more about the meta change, which is great. Every set does this, but we ultimately just fall right back into Domain and Atraxa reigns supreme. So we'll see what the results are from, like, World Championship Series soon enough. But yeah, it's all these new cards, people are trying to test them out on Arena, but I think that they'll ultimately fall back into, like, Overlords or Domain or whatever. Yeah. One thing I have been looking at, which is I don't know, we talk about Secret Lairs quite a bit when they come out, and I've been looking at the value aftermarket for a lot of secret lairs that I thought were cool that, like, sort of like, yeah, you just, I didn't want to buy at the time, or it was after the whole FOMO thing and blah, this, blah, that, reasons, boycotting, blah. And it's crazy how little, you know, it's funny how, you know, the FOMO thing creates like this crazy stir. Like, I got to go buy these things and like get in line, sit in the lobby for a while. And the thing is that these things don't generate value. Like, they don't sell for anything like crazy right off the bat. Yes. If you want an early ticket to the seat, or you want an early seat, you know, to like to the show, you want to play the X-Men or the Marvel superheroes right now, they're expensive. But if you wait, I don't know, 6 months, we already see these Marvel Secret Lair drops like dropping like a rock, because Wizards of the Coast went back on their mission statement for Secret Lair, which is that they won't reprint cards that are printed in Secret Lair, right? It's sort of like that one-time get. So they said that, don't worry, these Marvel cards will be printed again in a future set. So we're starting to see the value of those drop. But things like, there are a few drops that obviously I've appreciated quite a bit, like Through the Wormhole. Did you happen to see that Secret Lair drop, Flash?
Oh, Through the Wormhole? What's that?
It's like it was when they were doing Galaxy Foils with like the Unfinity set. And
oh, it had the Arcane Signet and some other treatments and stuff.
Yeah, the Soul
yeah,
Ring.
I remember that one.
Yeah. A really cool Lightning Greaves where it's like ice skates on Saturn's rings. It was super cool artwork, right? That one is $240 if you want to get one of those. Which
I mean, I would say blanket statement, there's going to be some exceptions occasionally, but like especially anything meant for mass appeal like the Marvel stuff, like there's not or even like opening boxes of Foundations outside of like collector's boxes with some treatments that are probably going to plummet in value soon. Like there's nothing worth investing in terms of new product in the game right now.
No, yeah, in
like as an investment product, as an investment vehicle, like there's none of the new product is stuff that is likely to appreciate in value.
Yeah, we've always said it on the show is like they're like this Magic, not an investment you want to make. Like
yeah, like you know, just like straight up the Lord of the Rings stuff, like that's going to retain some value, but the way they're going to be printing the Marvel and Final Fantasy stuff, like my feeling is there's going to be some chase stuff, and then overall it's just going to be junk. Like it's going to be bulk.
Yeah, I think they're doing this Shatterfoil thing right now to gear up for the Final Fantasy thing. Like I think Final Fantasy is going to have a ton of Shatterfoils, and like we've already seen the drop of serialized cards, like. But the last few sets have not had serialized cards, and nobody has seemed to say anything or notice at all. It's kind of awesome. It's like, oh, sweet. Yeah, nobody gave a shit anyway. Like it was a cash grab, get you to buy more packs, potentially, you know, like get one of 500 of the Hirobi, you know, whatever. It's like,
yeah. I mean, the whole thing. The whole game right now is a cash grab. Like it's fully like Hasbro calling the shots in terms of what the product cycles are, like what the like types of products are, like the frequency of set release, like the type of Universes Beyond stuff. Like it is not to hammer it in too much. Like we're not in the quality era of the game right now.
Right. Yeah. Once you start going past a certain point, I mean, we all had that experience over the course of 2020 when we were like we were noticing how awful card quality was at that time because they were expanding. And then now we've just accepted that the quality is just a little bit lower for cards. And now the quality of the game as it continues to stretch and broaden in this way is experiencing a similar effect. So not to like dampen anybody's mood on the game or the intricacies or like the complexity, which is also, you know, a big reason why I love it. As it grows in complexity, I see, you know, you see new things, you see new strategies, new things you want to play with. Like last week we talked about Storm. That's a whole new, like, that's a whole new mechanic and whole new type of flavor.
I mean, the upside of tons of new product is that there is, you know, within that, like, there is some stuff that is worth talking about, like, that is relevant to CDH, that is just, like, good design and all that sort of stuff, because there's so much product. But the bad part is there's so much product, and you have to, like, weed through, and a lot of it truly is junk. It's just, like, bulk.
Yeah, yeah, and you're just going to be sitting on that bulk. So if you have bulk and you want to send it to the Mock Stars...
A lot of Fallen Empires and Homelands being printed right now.
Yeah, right. A lot of those, yeah, just one or two of those cards have value, and then the rest of it goes in the bin. Like, and the power creep every year is noticeable as well. So, like, there are cards that when they're printed, like, I think the new Coma is one of them, where it's like, it is a powerful card on a powerful creature that, like, the World Eater, where it's like an 8/12, and then when it deals damage, you create 4/3/3 blue serpents. It's a powerful card. It's at rare. It's going to be $1 in no time. Like, this 8/12 for 7 mana that can't be countered, has trample and ward 4, will drop even further in value than it currently stands at $1. That's how power creeped we've gotten. Is like, this normally would be the bomb that everyone's trying to get to or reanimate to win the game, because this normally would win the game. But yeah, that's where we've gotten at the current juncture. But it doesn't mean I'm not excited. I am still very excited about the game and all the things coming down the pipe. So funny thing is, as we talk about the future of the game, the current state of the game, let's jump into our main subject for the day. We're going to be talking about a card that has existed for a long time. Since Shadows Over Innistrad, it has made waves and maybe even ruffled some feathers over the course of that time. We're talking today about the other Frog of Doom, the Gitrog Monster. If you guys are unfamiliar, the Gitrog Monster is, well, kind of unbelievable when you pair it with certain cards, right? Like, Flash, Dakmor Salvage is the first one that comes to mind. This is, it is the combo machine. It just, like, Dredge is disgusting with the Gitrog Monster. If you're unfamiliar with it, it is 3, a black, and a green for a legendary creature, Frog Horror. That is a 6/6 death touch. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice the Gitrog Monster unless you sacrifice a land. You may play an additional land on each of your turns. Whenever one or more land cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, draw a card. This thing, yeah. So I'm not sure if you can see it yet, or if you've played against it and you've seen it in real life, but if you're if you've ever seen Dakmor Salvage, Dakmor Salvage has this ability called Dredge, where if you would draw a card, instead you may put exactly 2 cards from the top of your library into your graveyard. If you do, return this card from your graveyard to your hand. Otherwise, draw a card. There are plenty of cards in Magic that have this ability. There are not any modern printings or recent printings of cards that have this ability, because it's disgustingly broken. So basically, you put the Gitrog Monster on the battlefield, and then you have a discard outlet, and then you discard Dakmor Salvage. And when you do that, a draw trigger goes on the stack, but Dakmor is sitting in the graveyard. So instead, you replace that draw with Dredge 2. So if you would draw a card, instead, mill 2. So you put Dakmor back in your hand, you discard it again to the discard outlet, boom, you mill and run through your entire library. That is the simplest combo that can be assembled with the Gitrog monster. But there's an entire, there are 97 other cards that have to go into this deck in order for it to function. So today we're going to break it down. Are you ready, Flash? Are you excited?
I'm so psyched. This is, this is one of the decks that's, it's not currently at the top of the meta, but it's been in the CDH meta, like, pretty much from the inception of the format, right?
Yeah, this is, like, if we're talking about, like, the true vintage EDH, this has persevered. Like, this is the original, one of the original CDH decks. Like, it's so easy to combo with. It's just, it just does everything. And people might say it got worse after the bannings. But I think the big thing to note after the bannings is that the world is healing. That Jeweled Lotus is no longer in the room with us. Neither is Dockside. And it we're better for it. Right, a mana crypt, like land mana crypt, dark ritual probably gets you to the Gitrog monster sometimes, right? That's not an option anymore. Like, it's just the world is healing, the format is becoming malleable. We don't know what sits at the top. Like, the only reason, and this is, I believe this right now, and this might be a whole nother topic we could talk about. But I was looking at the results from the past 2 months now that, like, since the bannings, and there are, like, Magda is topping a lot, which is cool to see. But the only reason I think a lot of these, like, Najeela decks, Blue Farm decks are still thriving and still, converting is because people are still playing them in mass. Because they don't know quite what would be successful if they were to venture off the beaten path. But if you have the courage, you could probably play Gitrog Monster and get there a lot and win a lot of games. Because this has been out of the spotlight for so long. And while, yes, there are players who are going to know exactly what you're going to do, there are new cards that make this just as formidable as it was way back in the day. So let's jump right into it. Planeswalkers. There's one in the list that we're looking at today. This is a list by a player called Scoot on Moxfield. They have written an entire book for their primer. It's truly impressive. And today we're going over their list. Starting off with Planeswalkers, they're running Grist, the Hunger Tide. This is a card that I love this. I love Grist. And it's, so Grist is a creature. As long as Grist, the Hunger Tide, isn't on the battlefield, it's a 1/1 insect in addition to its other types. So it's a creature alongside being a Planeswalker. I don't think that's necessarily, like, relevant for what the deck totally wants to do. But it is an alternate win condition. Like, if you're able to ult it, yes. So it also has an ult for -5, starts at 3. Each opponent loses life equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard. So it also has the ability to just mass remove everybody's life, which is pretty darn cool for a 3-mana Planeswalker. It also has the ability to mill. So that is what the Gitrog monster is actually looking for, is like, hey, we're going to mill a card. If it's a land, I draw a card. So this becomes a sort of like pseudo draw engine, as long as you're doing it right. The creatures. Now, you'd think you need a lot of mana dorks. You do. They have 8, 9, 10. Are there more? 10 mana dorks.
I think 10's about right. About half the creatures.
Yeah. 10 dorks. Because if you get A plus B, the game is yours. So you need to be able to get to A, which is the Gitrog monster, as fast as possible. So we're... Oh, 9 right here. Because Allosaurus Shepherd was sneaky, sneaky, sneaky. You get to play Birds of Paradise, Boreal Druid. Because you're probably playing Snow Basics. It just... or have some sort of snow mana interaction. Deathrite Shaman, the best mana dork in the format. Delighted Halfling, Elves of Deep Shadow, Elvish Mystic, Findhorn Elves, Jiraga Tree Speaker, and then also Land of War Elves. Now, the rest of the creatures is where this gets very, very interesting. You know how we were talking about discard outlets? There's one mana and two mana discard outlets that just, oh man, they are so freaking good. Like Putrid Imp is one black mana for a zombie imp 1/1 that says discard a card from your hand, it gains flying until end of turn, and that has threshold, gets +1/+1 and can't block. So whatever, that's fine. But it's just, it is a one mana discard outlet that allows you to pitch that Dakmar or pitch a land in general just to be able to draw a card. I think that's also underappreciated, is when you stall out that these discard outlets are technically draw engines when the Gitrog monster is just on the battlefield. So Sylvan Safekeeper also turns into a draw engine for one green mana and protection for the Gitrog monster. Collector Oof is here for stacks. And that's the other element of this, is if you can't get there, you got to slow everybody else down so that so you can get there. So there's a couple stacks pieces here. Collector Oof, Opposition Agent. You still have to run all of the normal ways to stop others from winning the game, like Endurance. It is still present here. I think six, the more that six pops up, the more I like it. And the less confused I am about it. You know, I think the first episode we ever talked about six, you were like, yeah, it's way simpler than you're making it. It's just really good value. I think it's one of the best cards from Modern Horizons 3. I really do. It is
good on the same level that like Ren and Six is good. You know, it's just like a super solid value card.
Yeah, it's like, it's three mana, yes, but it's an Underworld Breach, and in this deck, it is a discard outlet. So, like, you put the draw engine together. It's like you just Dakmar, discard Dakmar, and now you're in an infinite. So, like, discard Dakmar with a let's say non-land permanent cards in your graveyard have retrace. I wonder if there's a combo weakness like that is assembled through. It isn't explained in the primer, otherwise I would be so freaking excited to describe it right now. But I wonder if there's a way to, like, Dark Writ, or I guess you could. Oh my god, you can go with Lotus Petal. You can get infinite mana with six and Lotus Petal. Because if you Dakmar Salvage with Gitrog on the field, you discard, replace that draw with putting the Dakmar back in your hand, and then you cast the Lotus Petal from the graveyard, sacrifice it, add mana, discard the Dakmar, and then just rinse and repeat, continue discarding the Dakmar and casting Lotus Petal for infinite mana. That is pretty damn good. I like that a lot. So six here just continues to grow, continues to find a way to impact the meta. Like, you could say we keep seeing it. Like, there's a reason for it. But then there's other old cards like Golgari Grave Troll ends up here because it has Dredge 6. You know, it's like, this was, now I can't remember what this was. Was this banned in Commander for a long time? I can't remember if this was like, or what format it's.
It was banned in Modern or Commander. I forget which format.
I know it's got to be banned in Modern for sure. Right, let's take a look at the old Scryfall. Cave Troll, right? Is that what it is? Golgari, yeah. Grave Troll. Haha. Searching. It is banned in Modern. Yeah, and restricted in Vintage. So yeah, this was a card that I think when I first started playing Magic, I was still playing Standard. And I saw this card and I was just like, whoa, that's really good. And then I was building in Commander and I was like, I should include that card. And for whatever reason, I didn't. But I think I noticed that it was banned in Modern and was just like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. Dredge is, like you said, Dredge is a mechanic they haven't quite found out how to rename and fix yet. So this, yeah, obviously finds a place here in the Gitrog Monster, just, you know, discarding and then dredging six more. You know, you have the potential to draw more cards just because the Gitrog Monster is going to see that you milling lands, and so it will draw a card. So there's a lot of loops here, and two combo pieces that a lot of people don't really think about are the Eldrazi Titans. Kozilek, Butcher of Truths, and Ulamog, the Infinite Gyre. And the reason for that is because they're shufflers. And like they, when they go to the graveyard from anywhere, they shuffle your graveyard into your library. And so we'll go through, we'll explain. Well, let's explain it right now. The combo, because if you have a discard outlet, you have Dakmor Salvage, and you go through and you mill your entire library, eventually you are going to hit one of these Titans, and you're going to put them in the graveyard, and then that ability will trigger and go on the stack. You have the ability to organize triggers how you see fit, as long as they're happening at the same time. So Dakmor goes in, you replace that draw, right? You mill two cards, you hit a Titan, shuffle trigger goes on the stack, Dakmor is back in hand, discard the Dakmor, keep milling, and then you keep drawing and keep milling, and then you just allow all those draw triggers to resolve. You shuffle the, you pick up your whole library, and then you hit that shuffle, and you shuffle your entire graveyard back in, and it's crazy how selective you can be with it, because there is a 17-step line with that combo that it blew my mind when I read it. So, if you want to end the game, you can do so with like infinite loops that we were talking about with, you know, like Lotus Petal generating infinite mana and using something like Finale of Devastation. So when you go ahead and you pick up your whole library from, or put it all in the graveyard and you shuffle it back in, right? You get to choose which draw triggers happen because you put an infinite number of them on the stack. Eventually you just draw and have your whole library in your hand, and then you have a discard outlet, throw them all in the grave, including one of the shufflers, throw that in the grave, and you can shuffle it all back in and go crazy, right? The fluidity with when the combo happens is crazy. But you can then Finale of Devastation for a crazy amount and end the game that way and cast every creature in your library or graveyard, including Deathrite Shaman. And if you're aware of Deathrite Shaman's second ability, which is to exile an instant or sorcery from a graveyard, each opponent loses 2 life. And so here is the line. It is technically 18 steps, but there's a prerequisite. So you need Gitrog and a discard outlet in play, an infinite mana established, like what we talked about, 23 lands, including Dakmor Salvage, plus the rest of your library in your hand. And then you must have a card that can kill your own creature, such as Culling the Weak or Abrupt Decay. The procedure. Your library must consist of 16 lands plus a shuffler, so one of the Titans, for this loop to work. To reach a state, discard 15 non-land cards, and then discard the shuffler to shuffle all of the 16 non-land cards in. Discard 16 lands to draw, then discard our Titan again to shuffle itself and the 16 lands into our deck to reach the starting state for the loop. So even if you're not in perfect conditions, you can force it to work through the Gitrog Monster's ability. That right there blew my mind. I was like, the way you can filter, choose what selectively goes into your library with these Eldrazi Titans is like, it's some big brain shit. I never really thought that was like even a possibility. So your first step after you've achieved that state is to discard Deathrite Shaman. And then you cast Finale of Devastation for X is 10, putting the Deathrite Shaman from your graveyard into play. It now has haste. Discard an instant or sorcery. Not relevant. That's not relevant to the loop. and then activate Deathrite Shaman, activate again. Then you need to sacrifice or destroy your Deathrite Shaman. Discard two lands to draw two cards. Discard a land to draw a card. Repeat this process by discarding land cards drawn this way into your library is empty. And then discard your Titan to shuffle itself, Finale of Devastation, Deathrite Shaman, a removal spell, and 17 lands in your library. And then you discard five lands to draw five cards. Discard a land to draw a card. Repeat this process by discarding lands drawn this way into your library is empty. Discard the Shuffle Titan plus 21 lands into your library. Cast Entomb, finding your Titan, and hold priority on the shuffle trigger. Discard and dredge Dakmor Salvage seven times, milling 14 cards, generating seven draw triggers to draw the rest of the library. Resolve the shuffle trigger. Discard three lands, draw three cards. Discard a land to draw a card. Repeat this step by discarding, you know, same deal. And then discard your Titan to shuffle itself, plus 16 lands into your deck, and then you repeat that process. That was a lot. But that is the type of big brain shit that you gotta have going on up here if you want this, if you want to play the Gitrog monster.
Yeah, you gotta memorize this stuff, I guess, to play the deck, right?
Dude, when I read that line, I was like, wow. Like, holy my God. How did you come up with that? But, like, it's important to have a very specific number of lands and cards in your library at a specific moment in time in order to set up scenarios to have the exact cards necessary to repeat the loop. So imagine being like, I will present this loop now and I will explain it to you. And you say all those things and your opponents go, this seems non-deterministic. And you go, trust me, it's not. And then they go, do it again. It's like, all right, 17 steps. Here we go. Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, Deathrite Shaman can end the game. I've played against other Gitrog monster decks that play something like Exsanguinate or Torment of Hailfire. But, you know, those are so easy to, like, interact with or counter. But I guess if you, you know, are in this infinite loop of discarding and manipulating your whole graveyard library shenanigans, even if it's countered and it goes to the graveyard, you should still be able to interact with, you know, and get it back. What I love are the number of infinite ways for this deck to go infinite as far as mana goes as well. So you have infinite ways to go, like to get infinite mana with something like Lotus Petal. You also have ways to get infinite mana with Dark Ritual. But then you also have ways to generate infinite mana with Crop Rotation. So using Crop Rotation, you can discard any irrelevant non-land card, discard your Titan Shuffler, resolve the trigger, cast Crop Rotation, sacrificing a land, drawing a card, go to get Gaia's Cradle, or hold priority on Crop Rotation, discard Gaia's Cradle, drawing a card, and then you basically loop that process and you continue to sacrifice Gaia's Cradle. And then with priority held, you shuffle it back in your library, you grab it out, and then you keep tapping it for infinite mana. It's a lot. So let's get into.
You really got to know the stack for this deck, huh?
Yeah, there are certain decks that are out there that have a chance now, right? But the amount of, like, just knowing and understanding the stack determines how successful you're going to be. Like, another deck I would say is familiar, and this reminds me of when Zaxxara first came out. Or maybe not Zaxxara. The creature
that card doesn't exist. You just made up that name, by the way. What card? Zaxxara?
Yeah, Zaxxara.
That card truly does not exist. What card are you describing?
I'm thinking of the land, or the whenever a permanent enters, you double the trigger. God, it's in my head. It's from Core 20. What is it? Oh, God. This is about as embarrassing as any other moment on the show where I can't think of the card that I need. Zaxxara is a real...
I can't help you because what's up?
Zaxara is a real card, just so you know.
Is it?
It's a Nightmare Hydra. Yeah, I have it on screen.
Zaxara. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not watching your screen, am I?
No, that's true. Yeah, that's a Sultai commander. But the thing that I'm thinking about is a 3/5 Death Touch that doubles the number of whatever. Whenever a permanent enters, if an ability would trigger, you double it. Anyway, with that, like,
by the way, listeners, if you think Zaxara is a psyop, mention it in the comments below. I'm still skeptical.
He still doesn't believe me. But if you also forgot, by the way, listeners, while we have your attention, this is the Mock Stars podcast, the number one podcast on the internet.
And we have tokens.
We have tokens. God, after this, we're going to figure out, we're going to make a commercial for these tokens. Put it right at the front of the show. Well, you know.
Never going to happen. Over my dead body.
You don't want to make a commercial with me?
I'm just saying, this token commercial, we talk about it every week after the recording. It's just not going to happen. Realistically, playing the odds.
I mean, you are a Vegas man. You know, if these odds were, they're definitely not minus, you know, like we're not taking most people are taking the under on this, that it would happen. At least you'd be smart if you were betting against us. DK Sportsbook, recognize. All right. Still can't think of the card name, but regardless, understanding the stack is incredibly important to playing the Gitrog monster and layering things, knowing when to hold priority so that your combo resolves the way you want it to. The same thing with that. I have the art for the card in my brain. I just can't think of the name. God, viewers, this is your time to shine. But you know, like when a landfall trigger happens, you know, you can order things as like the way that permanents are triggering, blah this, blah that. But you can assemble combos just by manipulating the stack in a way that's advantageous for yourself and holding priority. And that is exactly what's happening here. So sorceries.
Like going back to the stack, I feel like I would not want to play this commander at anything but a competitive table where people actually understand the stack. Because not only do you have to know your triggers and how everything works, like, I feel like if you're at a table and a couple of the other players aren't quite locked in terms of knowing the rules and how the stack operates and all that sort of intricacies, you're going to have to spend so much time explaining it to them.
Yeah, you're basically going to look like Charlie Day and you're with your conspiracy board. While also simultaneously having to be like a college professor or someone stating their thesis as to why this works, right? You're going to have to educate the table. So I totally feel that. I would not want to play this casually. I don't think this exists casually. Like, I don't think it can. It's one of those commanders that, like, you know, you bring out and you go, I'm playing the Gitrog monster, but it's not the crazy Gitrog monster that you know you might have heard about. No, it is every single time. As long as it includes Life from the Loam and Dakmor Salvage, it has the potential to be that stupid infinite draw type thing that you have to explain and how you're playing the stack. So yeah, I don't want to be the guy teaching people at the table. Sorceries, though, for the deck are rather limited. You're not really playing a ton of stuff here. I think like you have your Green Sun Zenith, you have your Finale of Devastation. Like we talked about how Finale helps win the game. Your Calling Ritual helps control the board, control the table. Imperial Seal puts a Dakmor Salvage on top, and then you are off to the races. Demonic Tutor gets the Dakmor Salvage or your discard outlet. Diabolic Intent, Life from the Loam, Sylvan Scrying, because, well, did we say Dakmor Salvage is good in this deck? It'd be nice if you could search any land in your library and put it in your hand. And then Eldritch Evolution, which I imagine Eldritch Evolution is another way to kill your Deathrite Shaman if something were to happen to sacrifice or something like that. So, pretty rad stuff. The Instance. This is a deck that doesn't necessarily interact with so much of, like, with the table. This is, like we said, there were a few stacks pieces that are going to help you continue the game or slow it down. This is a deck that doesn't use artifacts unless it's for mana, and so Collector Roof has a place. You know, it doesn't have a real meaningful way to interact with the graveyard at instant speed, so Endurance has a place. Opposition Agent has a place. But those are really the only three, like, stacks pieces, right? And so you're not interacting with the table a ton. You're just pursuing your goal. And that's sort of... when we talked about Nadu, I remember you brought up the Gitrog being like, well, isn't that like a non-deterministic loop type of deck? I think it's more just like Nadu never interacted with the table. It only interacted with the table when they wanted to stick their finger in the loop, right? And so that's very similar to how the Gitrog operates, where you are attempting... like, you start the game playing with everybody else, but you are attempting to play the game alone. Like, that is your goal. You are attempting to create a solitaire situation that ends in the game, or with, you know, like, that ends the game with you winning. So, your Instance, Summoner's Pact for discard outlets. You have Autumn's Veil to protect your win conditions along with Summer's Veil, or Veil of Summer. Dark Ritual for infinite mana. You have a few pieces of removal. Calling the Weak to kill your Deathrite Shaman. Abrupt Decay is really good interaction, actually. Assassin's Trophy for when you're going through your loop, you can actually just destroy all of your opponent's lands instead and keep the game going. And then there's actually Ad Nauseam in here, which is kind of insane to me, considering how many high-cost cards there are in here. Artifacts. Simple, simple, simple. Mana, mana, mana. Get to Gitrog, win the game. The One Ring is here. It's just that good of a card. It could do it without it. It doesn't need it. But if you do happen to, like, ramp into it, it is just a really good card to have. Although I can see it sort of dilutes the card quality density that normally that is so valuable about with decks like this that are so hyper focused on the objective. We have enchantments, my favorite section, of course. Carpet Flowers, Wild Growth, and then the deck is playing Chains of Mephistopheles. So another
hey, some more explaining to do the table.
Did you like explaining your loop to the table? Well, try explaining Chains of Mephistopheles. It's far more simple than the text on it would lead you to believe.
Yeah, it's got one of those old school text boxes that overcomplicate things. There is, like, I think for Chains of Mephistopheles, you can look it up. Like, multiple people have made simple flowcharts.
Yep.
That you can just reference.
Yeah, if you were to draw a card, what do you do? Did you discard? Is the first one you drew it during your turn? Blah this, blah that. It's basically if you draw a card past the first one in each of your draw steps, you also discard a card. So it's just another way to hose card, like, card draw engines. And even in Chains of Mephistopheles, with a Gitrog monster going, right, you don't necessarily need all of these, like, cards in your hand. They're just as valuable to you in your graveyard, so you can keep creating draw triggers. Chains will continue to basically, you'll draw and then discard, draw and then discard, so you'll always have the same number of cards in your hand. Your hand will never grow, but you have the ability to filter what is in your hand. So Chains of Mephistopheles doesn't theoretically hurt you as much as it hinders everybody else. We have a discard outlet right here in the enchantment section. It's called Oblivion Crown. It's one in a black flash enchantment. Enchanted creature has discard a card. Creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So there are a few loops with this that you put a couple creatures out. You go ahead and you put the Oblivion Crown on it. You discard, 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 discard. And then there's a way to get rid of it and then put it on another creature and then discard, 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 and then make your creatures infinitely big. And then you just swing and win if you don't have another win condition. So another a discard outlet, also a win condition for this deck. Survival of the Fittest, awesome. And then I don't know why, and this is a talking point, I don't know why Necropotence is in here. Because once you land it, you are screwed. Like, if you were... So, Necropotence is a notoriously wonderful card advantage engine. It's not card draw, but you skip your draw step, and if you would discard a card from your hand, remove that card from the game instead. This is a deck that solely focuses on discarding cards. So I don't know, you know, and for them to land in the graveyard for the Gitrog monster to trigger. So it is one of those cards where I see in here, it's like...
With Necropotence, though, doesn't it technically hit the graveyard before it exiles?
It says remove it instead. So it replaces landing in the grave. So yeah, kind of one of those... you know, it is a good card. And there are... I think Necrodominance also has like the same line of text. Yeah. If a card or token we put into your graveyard from anywhere, exile instead. Yeah. So Necropotence and Necrodominance have very similar lines of text. It must just be good enough to get to your engine and then find a way to sacrifice it or destroy it. Like Abrupt Decay it.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Like the upside on like a turn one Necropotence is just too high.
It is. Like it I get it. You're gonna see 20 more or 30 more cards than your opponents will in a short matter of time.
All 99 cards in your deck, like you can probably afford to lose 13 of them to the exile trigger, right?
Yeah.
Take it home.
Yeah, yeah, more than likely. If you're running that 17-step loop we talked about earlier, maybe not, but, like, yeah, you should be able to get there. Like,
well, I mean, it's there to land it early and see those cards and get all those cards in your hand to initiate the loop. Like, once that's there, probably you gotta, like, Abrupt Decay?
Yeah, eat it. Like, something? Yeah, you eat it. I was wondering if they were going to play any bargain. Like bargain cards.
Archdruid's Charm does it as well. Yeah. That's in your deck. You can't do it with Assassin's Trophy because that's other permanents.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's a couple ways to get rid of that Necropotence once you have the cards in your hand. It must just be that, like, that super, super high upside. Like, if you can land it turn one, turn two, get all your pieces in your hand, sure, you're going to lose some cards to the exile trigger, but you can get rid of it and then go off however you gotta.
Right. Yeah, this is like, it's a deck that obviously has a ton of explosive potential, right? And if Necropotence helps you get to that explosion a little bit quicker, a little bit sooner than your opponents can, you know, respond to it or like react, then it's valuable. Like, I think that, yeah. That must be the reason.
I mean, looking at this, this deck doesn't play a ton of interaction.
It barely plays
interaction. And the interaction seems directed at yourself most of the time. And it doesn't, you know, have silence effects. It doesn't, you know, even, like, play Docent of the Falling Leaf or whatever for Grand Abolisher type situation. Like, it needs to just go off, right?
Yeah, I think as long as
there's no mid game in this deck.
No, it is push, and whenever the combo becomes assembled, that's when it ends. End the game as fast as possible. And like, I think as long as you aren't discarding Dakmar Salvage, you know, into exile on accident or whatever, you Necropotence get all the cards in hand, and then hopefully you run into Dakmar and, one of your removal options.
Crop rotation will get you to your Dakmar as well.
Yeah.
You know?
So
one of your tutors for the Dakmar.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. So maybe that's just it. It's just, it gets you there. It sets you up. So even though you might spend 20 life, you pick up 20 cards and then you lose quite a few of them to exile. As long as you keep three cards, which is a discard outlet, Dakmar Salvage, and a way to remove the Necropotence, you will win the game. So there's that. I think that's justified. I'm glad we talked through it, because I was just like, man, you just exile all the shit. It's just, once, if you go to remove your Necropotence and someone counters your removal, like, GG, man, you are set back another like 3 or 4 turns just to like try to get through it. So
I wonder if there's versions of this deck that want to play Beseech the Mirror, right? Because then you can bargain the Necropotence as well.
Yeah, that's what I was also thinking, is there are plenty of like bargain cards out there that, you know, I probably don't hurt their card quality density, but they don't provide the same card advantage. Like, obviously, Beseech the Mirror does. Like, it searches out and casts something, so it might give you your missing piece while also getting rid of the thing that is stopping you from comboing. So, yeah, I would believe that Beseech the Mirror has a home here. Like, it's hard for it to not find a home in a lot of different black decks.
Mm-hmm.
Lands, as we get to the final stage of the Gitrog monster build, Dakmar Salvage, boom. We talked about it ad nauseum. We have...
Well, actually, before we get into specific lands, I want to say, like, in terms of the Necropotence discussion,
mm-hmm.
this deck is running 36 lands. That's probably pretty average for a Gitrog monster list.
Yep.
You need, what, 16 lands for the loop, you said, or 15?
You need 21. Like,
21 lands.
21 lands, and then you need 16 or something instants and sorceries or something like that.
Okay, so you have, in theory, you need 21 lands for the loop, a couple in the battlefield. You have 10 lands that you don't really need, right? You can discard plenty of lands, Necropotence, probably, and still be good to go.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you wanted to walk that loop, yeah, you could probably still, like, navigate it through, like...
I'm just saying in terms of your options when you're discarding through Necropotence, because that's what we were just talking about.
Yeah, when you're being...
You don't have to be stingy with your lands. You can get rid of a bunch of your lands and still be good to go.
Right. Yeah, it's, gosh, what was I going to say? The thing about it is that if you are... the type of person who is sitting at the table with the Gitrog monster, you have 100 reps in with this. You know, you understand it thoroughly, right? You know what cards you're going to be pitching, like, to this effect. So, like, if you're doubling down on Necropotence, you know what cards make the deck tick. You know what cards, like, you're probably going to get rid of the One Ring. Send that shit into exile. Whatever. Doesn't matter. It doesn't contribute to you winning the game faster right now. So...
Hey, while we're in the lands and talking about Necropotence, Boseiju gets rid of Necropotence for you.
Oh, it's only opponents. I was just reading that,
no,
too.
Opponents, fuck.
Yeah. But it is a really great card in the deck, because you channel it, which means you discard it, which means it triggers the Gitrog monster. So.
Hey.
Hey, replaces itself. Pretty dang good. There's a lot of these lands in here that... we go through, this is a lands deck, and like, this could, you know, is essentially like part of, if not the most important part of the deck in making it work. Obviously you need lands for mana, but your commander is a card draw engine when it comes to lands going to the graveyard. So a lot of things like Cabal Pit have threshold. You can sacrifice it to give, like, target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. So pseudo removal in a graveyard focused deck that is likely to have threshold, but when it goes, you draw a card. So that's pretty freaking great. And then you have things like Bazaar of Baghdad. You know, it's like you draw 2 cards and then discard 3 cards. So you're going to draw 3, discard 3, or you're going to draw 2, discard 3, and then draw however many lands, you know, you discard it off that discard 3 effect. So they have upside even further past their, I mean, Bazaar Baghdad's just an amazing card. And it just gets even better in decks like this. City of Traders. Most of the time, people look at the sacrifice trigger as a down, like a downside. In this particular scenario, it's great because it replaces itself. Like that's what you're getting with a lot of these lands. Your fetch lands go crazy. Your like Lake of the Dead is a land I've not uttered its name in quite some time, but it's crazy. It has the ability to tap it, sacrifice a swamp to add 4 black mana to your pool. I had a copy of this when it was like $10 and I didn't think it was that good. And then it was like the instant I sold it, it was like, oh yeah, that card's really good right now, man. It's $80. So Lake of the Dead is amazing.
I mean,
here.
You need your commander on the battlefield. Like, this deck just wants to power out your commander and go off.
Yeah, this is like a turn
and
2
Lake
or
of the
turn
Dead
3.
Helps that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, there's a bunch of, like, there are a lot more other cards that just have, like, sacrifice effects. Like, they are playing the snow-covered forest and snow-covered swamp. And then they're playing Shifting Woodlands as well. This makes me so happy because while we have, like been singing this card's praises for, like, food chain combos or, you know, even it becoming a secondary Underworld Breach, it's, like, this just becomes the discard outlet you might need, like that's just sitting in your graveyard. Someone countered it or whatever. Shifting Woodlands is like such a good backup engine for anything you might need. Or you like the Gitrog monster dies. Just throw the Shifting Woodland or like use the Shifting Woodland to turn it into a Gitrog monster and still roll through your loops. Like, I think that's kind of gross, kind of awesome. Talon Gates of Madara, boom, interaction, it's rare. And then Urza's Saga being like another utility land here, sacrifices itself, would draw you a card and gets your Lotus Petal that is another combo piece for you into play. So there's a lot going on here. There is an entire primer for you to read. It'll be in the description below. You can check out. It also links you to a collaborative Gitrog primer. It also links you to a Gitrog CDH a library of cards that are specifically tailored to the Gitrog monster. And then there's also a Discord community in this primer as well. So if you would like to learn more about the Gitrog, if you're looking to play this deck or give it a shot, proxy it up, just educate yourself on how the stack works. You can check that out in the description below. Flash, any final thoughts on the Gitrog monster?
No. I have never played against this deck. It's cool to actually have talked out what the loops are and everything and see it explained. Makes more sense to me now.
Yeah. I was thoroughly impressed when I read through the primer the first time. Just being like, wow, whoever came up with this is a genius. It's really strong. Yeah. It's still strong today.
Yeah, I'm looking at the primer now, and there's a line right at the top that says it's an unsolved combat.
Brother, this guy stinks!
Sorry, I've got a cat walking on the soundboard. Can you say that one more time, Flash?
Nope.
Oh man, with all that valuable information lost to the misfortunate steps of a cute little Princess Chonky.
Yes.
Oh, she said hi. All right. Are you sure you don't want to say it one more time?
No.
All right.
The moment's passed.
The moment has passed. Well, this has been the Mock Stars Podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. We hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. I loved talking through this. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad that this is, you know, we settled on this today. This is great. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by finding us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. And also stay tuned for more episodes. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms where you can leave us a 5-star review and make us look super duper cool. You guys don't know how cool I look today because I took my stupid face off of the screen. But my stupid face being on the screen was apparently hurting our viewership because you guys are watching more than ever now that I'm no longer on screen. It's awesome. So, you know, it's like that episode of SpongeBob where he just thinks he's ugly and his breath stinks is, you know, like actually what's happening. Yeah, something like that. All right.
Can I say something? And this might be a revelation. I have never seen an episode of SpongeBob. Like, I'm familiar with the stuff from the memes and whatnot, but I have never actually seen an episode.
That is impressive. Like, honestly impressive that you've avoided it for this long. Just like, you never played Pokemon before, did you? I think that's...
Never seen an episode of Pokemon. Although I have seen the live-action Detective Pikachu movie.
Oh.
And I have never played Pokemon, video game or card game.
Wow. You are a rare bird, Flash. It's kind of like, I'm just impressed that you've dodged SpongeBob up until, well, soon it'll be an unavoidable thing. You will have to talk about SpongeBob ad nauseum with when the Secret Lair comes out. But the fact you've also avoided Pokemon is impressive. It was just so popular. You have an iron will.
Yeah. You know what, though? I have seen the film Tar at least 15 times.
The next week's episode, a breakdown of the movie Tar in with immaculate detail. No, I have not.
Oh, man, it's amazing.
Have you played Pokemon?
Nope.
Oh, man, it's amazing.
Although, no spoilers, Tar does end with, I think, a Monster Hunter reference.
Hmm. I'm intrigued. All right. That's next week's episode. It's determined. If you are out there listening and you're anticipating next week's episode already, there it is. A intricate breakdown of the movie Tar. And I'll have to watch it in the meantime. All right.
Do you know the director of Tar also invented, and this is absolutely true, Big League Chew?
No way.
100% true.
That's a... No way. I love Big League Chew.
Little preview of next week's episode.
Yeah, there's nothing better than bubble tape and Big League Chew. All right, we're getting out of here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Oh, yeah. All of our patrons, you're awesome. Thank you. You can support us on Patreon. All of our official Pepperheads for $3 a month. Get an entry in each of our bi-weekly giveaways. Or like our Cherry Vanilla Pepperheads, Will Rule, K-Mr. K, UWP Quirt, Demon82, Tommy Cypher, Jacob Hibbern, The Boogie Ghost, Pool Boy Barry, Draw for Turn, KB, Maybe Jeremy, and Maybe Anthony. Thank you all so much for your support. We got Ravenlift in the Mockstars Dr. Pepper Lounge as well. And rocking some Nya Guy Gon' Do hats. If I remember right, I saw that on the Discord server. They arrived safely and they look clean. Maybe it's time for another seat to open up in the lounge. Get some more hats out there into the world. All right. Yeah. This is the Mockstars Podcast, the home of the mid-range mindset. Nya Guy Gon' Do, Willie Send His Peeps, Don Cheadle. Have to say his name legally once per episode. And the Space Jam 2 is our favorite movie of all time. We know it drink two Dr. Peppers. It's the equivalent to the Limitless pill. All right.
There we go. I think we hit them all.
Yeah, that's all of them. All right. We're getting out of here. Peace.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for sticking around to the end of the episode. Here is this week's bi-weekly giveaway. And I got to say, before I announce what it is, I absolutely love when karma comes to just bite me in the ass, because when I was going to Mock's boarding house to go pick up this week's prize, which I had hoped to be a collector's booster of Foundations, I was disappointed to see that they were completely sold out. And at the top of the episode, we talked about how disappointing and unfun pre-release might have been, which is why I wasn't interested in going. So this week, unfortunately, all they had for sale were pre-release boxes. So this week, our giveaway prize is a pre-release pack from Foundations. So let's go ahead, spin that wheel, and see who wins. Ooh, baby, who's it gonna be? Ooh, flagging. It's Revenlift! Congratulations, Revenlift. I hope you've enjoyed your time in the Mockstars Dr. Pepper Lounge. Congratulations, and thank you to everyone for participating. Thank you to everyone for supporting the show. And remember to drink your daily 2 cans of Dr. Pepper, achieve the limitless state of mind, expand your neural pathways, and have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much for listening. Peace.